Neocatskill.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Hope you're doing well and staying safe. We have a packed show for you tonight, so let's get straight to it. In the second half of the show, we'll find out what some of the federal cuts to Medicaid can mean to us here locally. And then we'll check in with Chris Rowley from the Shawangunk Journal, letting us know what's happening in Ellenville and Ulster County. But first, the New York State budget has been approved. New York lawmakers approved a $254 billion state budget last night, more than a month after it was due. State Senator Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins is a Yonkers Democrat who says the budget places an emphasis on affordability.
In this budget, New York has made a choice to stand with working people and to invest in people.
State Republican Leader Rob Ort sees things differently.
This budget doesn't address the main issue of affordability, even though it was the word on the tips of everybody's lip.
The spending plan includes $50 million to fund vouchers for renters in danger of losing their home. And it'll send checks to up to $400 to millions of New Yorkers. Thank you to John Campbell for WNYC for the New York Public News Network for that information. And staying on budget, from another report for the New York Public News Network, if President Donald Trump's budget is passed, New York could see hundreds of millions of dollars cut for major programs. His spending plan would slash funding for rural airports, heating assistance, healthcare programs, and more. Emily Russell reports on the potential impacts to upstate New York.
Trump is calling it his skinny budget. That's because he wants to cut more than 20% of federal funding that's not related to defense spending. Democrats like Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are sounding the alarm.
The budget either totally eliminates or cuts to the bone so many of the federal programs upstate New York families rely on most.
Schumer spoke Thursday at a press conference over Zoom.
It's an all-out assault on upstate New York families, a gut punch to our local governments, who lose billions in funding under this plan.
One program that would be eliminated under Trump's budget is the Northern Border Regional Commission. It's handed out nearly $50 million for about 80 projects around the North Country in recent years. Things like a new bridge in St. Lawrence County, a health clinic in Lewis County, and a food hub in Essex County. As Schumer said on Thursday, Trump's budget would also impact every airport in the North Country.
It would also cut 50% of federal essential air service. That would devastate North Country airports and hurt places or smaller airports. Watertown, Ogdensburg, Plattsburgh, Messina, Adirondack Regional Airports.
Those places have gotten millions of dollars in federal support. Ogdensburg and Messina's airports both recently got more than $2 million each for upgrades. Over the years, Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik has described the essential air service as critical. In a statement on Thursday, a spokesperson for Stefanik said what Schumer was doing was, quote, desperate fear-mongering, and added that Stefanik will, quote, continue to deliver EAS and Northern Border Regional Commission funding to NY21, unquote. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump's proposed budget would also eliminate funding for substance abuse programs, as well as for the low-income home energy assistance program. Last year alone, nearly 14,000 people in St. Lawrence County used that program to help pay their heating bills. With reporting help from Amy Fireisel, I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you, Emily Russell, for that report, and thank you to the New York Public News Network. All right, now let's head over to Shawangunk and Ellenville and Ulster County. Chris, welcome back to the program. You had a meeting the other day of some of the local officials and administrators all came to Ellenville to talk about what they do. What can you tell us about this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Ulster County came to Ellenville. Ellenville has this really nice new venue, the Common Good. It's a bookshop with a bar attached and also good coffee. And it has a little stage and they can have folk singers and so on perform there. And poets, they have a very interesting little poetry reading thing going on there, too. Anyway, so out with the poets and the folk singers. Instead, we had the Fab Foursome from Ulster County, headed up by Jen Metzger, the county executive, With her was County Controller Marge Gallagher, and then the District Attorney Emmanuel Neji, and then Juan Figueroa, the County Sheriff. And they came down. So for that evening, we had the brain trust, the people who run out the county, not the legislative side, but all the administrative, right there in Ellenville on one stage. And it was very interesting. And they explained. And the first thing that, to get over here, and this is for all listeners just to focus on for a second, they started off by explaining what they do. And which, when you think about it, is sometimes hard to nail down. Now, reporters, because we deal with this a lot, right, we tend to know what the controller does. But most people, before I was a reporter,
yeah.
Anyway, they explained what they do. And Metzger ran out some numbers, and they were scary, that they have 1,400 employees, thereabouts, and a $100 million budget. There you go. But put that in perspective. That budget is about the size, same size as a let's see, a B or an A school district.
Wow.
So that just, you know, just get our budgets in mind here. Like the even a little tiny, relatively small school like Ellenville, which is, I think, either a C or a D, their budget is more than $50 million. The education thing is very big.
Yeah.
Anyway, so since you put that out there, the $100 million, and what does she do? What do they do? What does she do all day? And big thing is putting together that budget and then finding money, finding ways to access all the various grant programs and loan programs in New York State. And it's a zoo of things. And they come from very odd things like DASNY, the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York. The what? Yes. Okay. That's a thing from the 1930s that I guess originally monitored or controlled or whatever dormitories, whatever they were. Anyway, and then and she has to go out and find that money, nail it down, get those grants, get money in, and then distribute it. The other side of it is that the county hands out a lot of grants, a lot
right.
of grant money. And you've got 22 towns and villages, and they're all, it's like mama bird comes to the nest, and the nest doesn't have the three or four chicks. It's got 22 of them, and they're all going, wah, 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 all the time. So that's pretty busy. So after her, we got March Gallagher, who explained what a county controller is. And basically, it's the fiscal watchdog of the county. And this is interesting. The county takes, Ulster County takes $600 million in Medicare and Medicaid payments coming to the county, and Ulster County receives more than $900 million in Social Security payments.
Wow.
Keep those numbers in mind. That's the scale of what we're getting for those particular areas. That's in Ulster County alone. And those things go to about 43,000 residents in the county. This is what's great about talking to March, yeah. is that she has all these numbers. She's amazingly smart, and she can just run them out to you, bang. It's a little scary, but, and then she made the point about politics and everything else that the Ulster County, until the disaster with the Ulster County Jail, which was about $30 million of a budget 20 years ago, that broke the old system where there was no county executive or controller, and everything was run by legislative committees, which allowed the worst things to happen, such as the $30 million over budget project to build the Ulster County Jail, and ended up raising Ulster County taxes by about 24% and basically broke that old system and changed the politics of the county. Anyway, so she outlined the various buckets that she has to deal with. And the big one that stuck in my mind was that they audit every single payment, every invoice. Is it in the budget? Was it paid correctly? Right. Is everything about it absolutely squeaky clean? Right. And that means every day they do claims audits. Whew.
Mm.
So anyway, there's a lot of work in that office, and they're on it. And so that was that good. And she also made the point that it's very transparent, which transparency is what you want
yeah.
with this kind of thing. Because that's how you avoid the $30 million over budget things and possible corruption. All county employee salaries are visible on the county controller website, and with that are all contractors' payments. So if you think there's something sniffy about what's going on in Ulster County, contractor payments for this, that, or the other project, you can go and find out. So that is pure transparency, and that's what we like. Okay, so then the DA, Mr. Nedji, he explained how he has spent his resources. He has limited resources, so he's got one of those terrible jobs where there's an ocean of demand, and he has a small lake of supply, and that's difficult. So he has to choose which crimes to take to court, which crimes to really press down hard on, which cases to make a big effort on, which cases to apply his assistant DAs and his staff to really dig into. And he has kind of everyday challenge. And he made the point that gun violence, which we do have some of, unfortunately, and he acknowledged the sad truth, it's nearly always a young person that's involved. And we should let that settle in. It's always somebody 17 to 25 when they're young guys, pride is at maximum, chips are on shoulders, membership in gangs is at its highest point, and people are trying to make reputations and are very prickly and dangerous, and they may be carrying a gun and they may use it.
Yeah.
And then they end up as felons, and then the whole thing happens and they're slammed up usually, and they'll be in Clinton or Attica or one of the tougher prisons, and they'll do 10, 20, 25 years. And if it's a really bad crime, they may not get out, you know, because there'll be endless pressure to prevent that. That's the sort of thing that they have to deal with. And County Sheriff Figueroa, who has 352 employees, including his deputies, he explained that he's responsible for the safety of the entire county. You just wonder, the county, we have 180,000 people. The county, okay, much of the county is actually policed by bears. I mean, it's parks and mountains, but yeah, so it's not as big as it looks on the map, but it's still quite a large area.
Yeah, well, you have a big city. You have Kingston.
Got Kingston. You've got a small city, New Paltz.
Right, yeah, got New Paltz, yeah.
Yeah, you got Saugerties, you got Ellenville, which is smaller, but still has its problems. There's a lot to take care of. And God help you if anything bad happens in Woodstock. Excuse me. Anyway, so he explained that Juan is a very optimistic guy. He's always trying to stay in the sunshine. And he talks about really working hard, have good relations with the state police, which sometimes be tricky, and also with the local police, and then working with kids wherever possible, trying to get over the message about social responsibility. And don't get the gun. Come on, play baseball instead. You don't have to go down that road. It doesn't lead anywhere that's worth having. So he's basically doing it. I described it as the essential work to prevent generational transmission of criminal tendencies that send young people, mostly young boys, men, into the prison system. If you've got to cut that off somehow. And it falls to him and committees and everything else that he can get generated and whatever. So anyway, so that was what they said. They got a few questions that were of interest, questions about the youth, and a question, of course, about the UCRRA imagined landfill on Milk Road up there on the boundary with Sullivan County. And that wasn't handled all that well, I didn't think. I think that's a hot potato that nobody wants to land on their desk.
Yeah.
And I understand it. And apparently I heard from the meeting last night at UCRRA, which I couldn't attend, but which apparently it got hot between the CEO of the UCRRA and the various people complaining about aspects of that landfill thing. And it's not over, and it's a political nightmare, which is what Metzger said, the county executive, Jim Metzger. She said, this is a political nightmare with a long history. It is. And every county is sending its trash at this point to Santa Cruz will face the same problems. One of which is that New York State DEC will not permit incineration. You can just take that off the board. You know, a lot of people say, no, they will, but so far it's not. So landfills or what? Something has to come up. Anyway, there is that legislation, the New York State Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act, Bill, Senate Bill S-4246A, which I suggest everybody take a look at. If you've got 15 minutes, go to the New York State Senate website and take a look at the bill. The idea is that firms selling packaging materials to develop ways to reduce packaging.
Right.
So make it less and less, to try to shrink our waste, shrink the waste stream down. Which is probably the way it's all going to work from now, which is to shrink it, get everything compostable out of it, recycle all the glass and everything we possibly can, get that out of it, and make manufacturers either use just a couple of kinds of plastic that can be recycled and avoid the kind of melange, minestrone of different kinds of plastics, which makes it very difficult. You've got a whole variety. And I understand why they all use different stuff. The world of polymers is incredibly fascinating. You can really go down a rabbit hole there if you've got the time. And it's interesting stuff. But unfortunately, it's all going to turn out as waste. And a lot of it ends up in the oceans. And how do we recycle it? Also, of course, you've got the microplastics problem, which ends up in our brains. It's really the gift that comes on giving. So anyway, they talked on all these issues. It was very interesting. I think the audience, about 30, 35 people there, which is pretty good for a weeknight, were impressed to actually see their county representatives there. I hope they will repeat and do it again and maybe in a larger venue. But it was also good for the common good, which I recommend to everybody. If you're the cocktails are a little expensive, but they have beers. If you're out and about, or if you're going to the theater in Ellenville, stop by the Common Good for it's a nice little bookshop as well.
Yeah, no, so. Definitely. I said I agree with you that it's good that the politicians and those administrators came out to said have some transparency and see how the sausage is made, if you will, on all the politicians and administrative stuff that runs the county.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The sausage is made by legislatures. These people basically are given the sausage and have to dole it out, deal with it. And it's just as difficult. This landfill thing is, as Jen said, it's a political nightmare.
Yeah.
It makes you think there are things to be said for old-fashioned monarchies where, you know, His Highness or occasionally Her Highness just says, put it there. And that's it. The argument's over. But, of course, people don't realize this, but if you understand the history of any monarchy, right, behind closed doors, long before Louis XIV or whoever these came out and thrust a finger at the map, there was an incredible political battle. The various ducks of this, that, and the other, and the comps to that, and various other things, are all fighting furiously about where something should be and who should get the money, and blah, blah, blah. And that all has to be killed. And then they kill each other. And then the doors open, and he appears. And hands down the decision. So the politics never actually went away. Just the appearance. Anyway, everybody have a good weekend. Let's hope and pray it stops raining sometime so we can mow, because otherwise my stuff's already...
Yeah, it's getting hot. Right now I'm eyeing Sunday as my afternoon to mow, but let's see how wet the grass is still.
Yeah, I know. Good luck.
Yeah. All right. Chris, thank you so much for that. I really do appreciate it. Take care.
You take care. Bye.
Again, Chris, thank you so much for that report. We'll be right back to learn how the federal cuts to Medicaid could affect us here locally. You're listening to The Local Edition. I'm your host for this Friday evening, Patricio Roballo. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Local Edition. winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
For a long time, the idea of having an American Pope was just a non-starter. It was just seen as concentrating too much power in the hands of one country. So to see Birthplace Chicago, Illinois, on the biography of the Vatican website right now for the Holy Roman Pontiff is sort of stunning.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it, and thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to the local edition on Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. So let's talk Medicaid. Today we're talking about an issue that could affect more than a third of all New Yorkers, Medicaid. A new article from New York Focus lays bare on how the proposed federal budget cuts could end a coverage for millions, dismantle community clinics, and plunge the state into a public health and financial crisis. Joining me on the phone right now is a reporter from New York Focus, Clara Hemphill. Clara, welcome to the program. Let's talk about this Medicaid cuts. Can you help us understand, you know, how broad this is and how many people will be affected?
It's about a third of the people in New York State. It's 43% of all births and 63% of all people who are in nursing homes. Before Obamacare, before the Affordable Care Act, it was only the very, very poor who were on Medicaid. But under Obamacare, it was expanded to include a lot of working people as well, people who work in bars or construction workers who are not unionized or part-time retail workers, students who work part-time. It's self-employed people. So it's really much, it covers many more people than most people understand, imagine.
Yeah, and one of the sources you have in your article, Mariela Carmago, talks about the ripple effects on clinics and caregivers. Can you talk about that, the ripple effects, if Medicaid has these cuts that President Trump is proposing and this administration is proposing, sort of the ripple effects that could happen in communities?
Yeah, one of the things that happens is it might affect people, not just the people who are on Medicaid, but people who have private insurance too. Because if a nursing home is forced to close, it'll close for everybody, not just the people on Medicaid. If a hospital or clinic, particularly in the rural areas, is forced to close, then the private paid people will be affected as well. And the people who work in the clinic will lose their jobs. It can be a real ripple effect.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, actually, I want to go back a little bit here. I see in your article, you spent some time in Representative Mike Lawler's town hall. In those town halls, because I know he made news recently for someone was taken out of his town hall for protesting there. Well, when you attended these town halls, what is the atmosphere like in these town halls? And what is, when you talk about the Medicaid cuts, how does these comments land with everyone?
Mike Lawler has a lot of support. He did win the election just in November, and it wasn't even particularly close. But there are an awful lot of people who are angry at what his party is proposing to do to Medicaid. And at the town hall last week, it was pretty raucous. There were an awful lot of policemen around. Everybody had to check their bag. And the policemen took out some people who were being, in their opinion, too rowdy. He still has a lot of support, but at least at the town hall, there are an awful lot of angry people.
In your reporting, as you're digging into this story, researching it. Did anything surprise you?
I'm surprised by how many people qualify for Medicaid. I didn't realize it was 6.9 million. And that doesn't include the people who are covered by another plan called the Essential Plan. So if you add in the people who get free care through the Essential Plan and the people who get Medicaid, it's close to half of the state.
That's definitely will have a huge impact on folks.
Yeah, we don't. This is not a done deal, right?
Yeah.
We don't know exactly what the Congress is going to do. All we know is that the budget resolution in February called for $880 billion in cuts to the committee that includes Medicaid. I think the congressmen are hearing a lot of angry constituents, and it may be that they back off on some of these cuts. Certainly, Lawler has backed off on some of the most drastic cuts.
Now, even that sort of the uncertainty, you have folks who are on Medicaid and hear what's going on and hear all the debates and the town halls that are going on. I assume the uncertainty of the possibility of losing your Medicaid can be stressful within itself.
Oh, I should think so, too.
Yeah.
Just there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of fear out there.
Losing Medicaid would change sort of the daily lives of for these families who are on Medicaid. When you interview those people who are angry or who are against it, what do the people you interviewed want the lawmakers to know?
They want the lawmakers to know that free health care has really transformed their lives, has really made it easier to get a job, to take care of their family, and that they're not grifters living off the public dole, which is what some of the Republicans describe them as.
Yeah. Now, of course, this could happen nationwide, but how is New York different from other states when it comes to Medicaid? Are there differences?
New York has been very skillful in drawing down federal money. They've had some very clever people in Albany who have figured out how to get the most possible federal money. So, ironically, we've been the most successful in getting the money. We'll be the hardest hit when it disappears, if it disappears.
Do you think the public protests will have any effect on this?
I think they've already had an effect. The House committee that was marking up the bill, which means the House committee that was deciding exactly what they were going to cut, postponed their deliberations for a week. So it was meant to start today, and instead, they decided to push it back a week. That's a sign, that may be a sign that the Republicans are queasy about making these cuts as bad as originally proposed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, Clara, before we go, is there anything else that we have not touched on you want folks to know about your article or any upcoming dates that folks should be aware of?
I think people should call their congressperson, their member of Congress, and tell them what they think the budget should be like. I think the congressmen do respond to the public. They do care what their constituents think. And just telephone them and tell them what you think the best procedure is, the best thing to do is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're talking to Clara Hemphill from New York Focus, talking about the healthcare crisis that could be in the making and how Medicaid cuts could reshape New York. Clara, thank you so much for talking to me. I do really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure, Patricio.
And that does it for the local edition. I've been your host, Patricio Roballo. Join us on Monday. We'll do this all over again, starting at 10 a.m. with Radio Chatsco and the local edition at 6 p.m. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, stay safe, take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.